Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebray, and Marielle Smith. Join us on our writing journey. Hi, Marielle.
Hey, Lou.
Hey, we're back.
Yes.
And it's very hot here, but we haven't got air conditioning.
Do you want some of mine? Oh, yeah, before, yeah. There's 40 over here.
Oh, no, that's way too hot. That's, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It's so weird because they have so much rainfall in Germany and Belgium and the Netherlands. Like, it's chaos in the south of the Netherlands.
Yeah.
My mom's walking buddy, he lives in the south of the Netherlands, and my brother just messaged me. Yeah, so he's fine because he lives on a hill, but the highway towards his place, it's blocked. You cannot go there. I'm like, oh, that sounds bad. We're not used to that. This is going to be so weird, by the way, because by the time this episode comes out, people are like, heat wave, I'm turning on the heater right now. So it's halfway July when we record this.
But 40 degrees, is that not a heat wave?
So in the Netherlands, they had a heat wave a while ago, and that was 30, 32. Here, it's 40 degrees. It's a yellow weather warning. It's yellow.
How can it be yellow at 40 degrees?
Maybe we had orange weather when it was like really hot and then there was a storm coming. I don't think we ever had orange.
But surely people die in 40 degrees.
Yeah, in the Netherlands, sure. People die. A lot of people die during the summer. I've never heard of heat-related deaths here, but you do realize that we have AC.
Yeah. I'd have to climb in the fridge if it got to 40 degrees.
It's not, I'm inside most of the days with the AC on, but ever since it started creeping over 35, so it's basically, it's like if it's 32 degrees here where I live at the seaside, it can be real feel 38. And that's just because of the humidity. So as soon as the humidity really started, I just have this headache and I cannot shake it. And it's just the humidity. And it doesn't matter how I run the air conditioning. I've tried the dry setting. I've tried the actual cooling setting. It's just...
It's just.
So I will, throughout this episode, if people hear a beep, that's me playing with the AC settings because it's driving me absolutely insane.
All I've got is a silent fan on Lily. Well, she's got it. So Lily has the silent fan blowing on her.
Well, good for her. I do like the kittens. They actually want to, they stay close to where the AC is.
Clever kittens,
yes. And only actually today was the first time that I saw one like sprawled out on the floor. And I'm like, you're a smart girl. Because usually they want to sit on the couch exactly on the spot beneath the AC. That's what it is. So it's hot and it's weird because I always kind of, for me, it's like over there in Western Europe, you all have the same freaking weather. So I kind of assume if the Netherlands and Belgium and Germany are drowning, you're drowning as well. But clearly you're not.
No, I don't watch the weather forecast very often. I usually just look it up on the internet. But I actually saw the weather forecast yesterday and it said that we've got an area of high pressure that was driving storms and rain like to Germany. But we were getting the heat.
Yeah. So, the weather does affect our productivity.
Yeah.
It does.
But does it affect our comparisonitis?
Yeah, because that's what we want to talk about today. We're still talking about goal setting. And today we want to talk about how comparisonitis can affect the goals you set for yourself. But yeah, so comparisonitis. I think the first person I heard talking about it was Joanna Penn on the Creative Penn podcast.
And did you think that's me when you heard her?
I think everybody has it to a certain extent. I think the question is more, does it affect you in any not so constructive way? That's how I want to put it. So I see it, of course, but there's like there's a whole difference between knowing when you compare yourself to others.
Yeah.
And letting that influence the books you write, the stuff you, or the marketing you do, the daily, weekly, monthly, yearly goals you set yourself. That's a whole other story. So yeah, of course, I look around. So comparisonitis is basically, this is where the itis comes from, is comparing yourself to others in a way that it becomes, well, maybe not an obsession, but it's not healthy. Hence the itis.
I'm just wondering, can it sometimes be healthy?
I think so. I think, what do you think?
Well, if it drives you to complete your novel or to sell so many books, I suppose it's healthy. Well, maybe healthy is a strong word, but it can help you achieve your goals. Because it's different, isn't it, to having a role model, you know, to picking or wanting to be like someone. It's a little bit different to that.
Well, because I would say that would be healthy comparing.
Yeah.
You see what somebody else has and you're like, oh, that will be great. Let me see what I can do to get to a similar point.
Yeah.
And then it's like a motivator.
Yeah.
And I think it becomes comparisonitis when it's no longer that. I almost said healthy competition, and I'm not sure whether that's, I don't think competition.
Yeah.
It's healthy in and of itself, but a healthy comparing. Like for me, you also compare yourself to others to see what is even possible. What are others doing? And it can be very healthy, especially to compare yourself to people who are in the same boat. Like, let's say you're like a single mom and you want to write a novel, but the people that you see online are all retired white men, you know, whose wives always stayed home and looked after the house and the kids, and so they have all the time in the world to write.
Yeah,
right. Good for them, but for the single mother who's like doing two jobs at the same time, if that's her only role model, then that's not very healthy. So it would be so much better if she was able to compare her situation to writers who are in a similar kind of place. And I think in that case, it could be a relief. Like, oh God, you also only get to write for like 15 minutes an hour and you're still getting things done. Oh, now I feel much less of a failure.
Yeah.
So I don't think comparing itself is the problem. I think when it becomes this, like this, when it slides into being unhealthier, then of course it becomes a problem.
I think you've also got to bear in mind that people sometimes just show you what they want you to see.
Oh yes, especially on social media.
Yeah. Yes, we've all seen those people.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see if Joanna Penn has a. Oh, okay, so for her, so the title of this chapter, so this is from her Successful Author Mindset book, which I really recommend. The title of the little chapter is actually Comparisonitis or Everyone Else is Better Than Me.
Yeah.
So that goes to show how, this is the comparing at its unhealthy, toxic, in its unhealthy, toxic form. When you compare and go like, I can never achieve that, so I might as well quit. Or you work yourself straight into a burnout.
Yeah.
Because you have this sense that you need to write this many words a day, yeah, or else you're never going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think comparing, but comparing for me, because it can help you become realistic, like the example I just gave.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you have no idea what other people in similar situations like you, what they are even doing, you don't know where you are. You don't know where you stand. So I think comparing yourself to people who are not the success story, I think that can be really freeing in a way, if that makes sense.
It does. It does make sense. I suppose there is a danger that you might still not be achieving the same as them because your circumstances are unique. So
yeah.
You might be a single mom, but you might also have a job where you're comparing yourself to the single mom that doesn't have a job, or, you know, family commitments or other aspects.
Yeah. So it's of course, I think, and this is why I think it might be a slippery slope if you don't have that kind of awareness around it.
Oh, we're back to awareness.
Always. No, but you know what I mean? It's like if you... This is actually in that book. I'm just going to read this. This is the quote. And you know, I love a good quote. And Joanna Penn also loves a good quote.
So, I love a good quote.
Like, don't we all? So the quote that she opens this particular chapter on comparisonitis is from Stephen Pressfield from Turning Pro. And he says, the amateur continuously rates himself in relation to others, becoming self-inflated if his fortune rises and desperately anxious if his star should fall. The amateur craves third-party validation. So for me, that means if you compare yourself just to make sure that you are doing right, because you need to hear, or you need proof that you are doing what you can, or that you're on the right path, or that you, then it already becomes very, like my whole body tenses up just thinking that.
Yeah.
If you're comparing out of a desperation to know that you're on the right, that you're on the right track.
Yeah.
I think that's already an unhealthy intention.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of that quote and I'm like, yeah, if you compare yourself to validate your own experience, I would say compare yourself to others for tips and tricks and maybe, you know, to cool down a little bit.
Yes, yeah.
But if you feel yourself slipping into she's almost in the same situation, but she gets to write 1,000 words a day and I only get 650. Yeah. I suck. I need to do better.
Yeah.
Or, and this is the other side of that medal, coin, what do you say?
Coin.
If you go like, oh, yeah, but she doesn't have to look after her mother like I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's also, but you hear my voice, you hear it in the tone. It's like, it's not a healthy way of comparing yourself to others.
No, or just using what they... a sharing, I suppose, because if they're sharing that information, you can use it in order to write your goals or set your goals.
So I think as long as you are open and curious in your comparison, I think then it can be really helpful. But you just have to be really aware that you don't slip into using that to validate or beat yourself up.
Yeah.
I know, it's hard though.
We've managed to identify the positive and negative of it, rather than it just being a negative.
Well, like I said, I think comparisonitis, that is that is how you would describe the negative aspect of it.
Yeah. Or the term for the negative aspect of it.
Yeah, because I do think that comparing, even something that starts out as like a healthy comparing, if I do think comparisonitis can catch you off guard.
Yeah.
So if you're used to comparing yourself to like an author friend, and you just compare yourself to each other, and it's like a check-in, hey, how are you doing? And how do you deal with this? And I just had this, and what do you think? Like, I think that can be very helpful in terms of, you know, keeping staying sane. But yeah. I think there's always the danger lurks that it becomes, and then it becomes a competition.
Yeah. Sorry for the squeaks. That was, it wasn't a mouse. It was Lily changing position and lying on her toy. Yeah.
That's why I put the kittens in the cage, because they were running around behind me.
Yeah. She's just snorted now, just to top it off.
Good go. Hey, so do you, I mean, okay, so I kind of assume, I don't know what you think, that we all suffer from comparisonitis to a certain extent, whether it's a debilitating extent or not.
Yeah. Yes, I do, but not much. As in, I'm kind of aware of it. And I'm also aware of the way that people portray themselves on social media, and the reality can be very different. I've got a friend who, she admitted she'd got a bit of a problem stalking someone that she used to be friends with. And I thought, I wonder how common that is.
She was
never going to get, you know, just looking her up on Facebook and seeing what she was doing and had she put weight on, and, you know.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, then you already know. Then you all, then.
Yeah.
I mean, then you are, that's like a red flag, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a whole different way if you lose touch with somebody and you just want to make, you're just curious how they are and you hope the best for them. That has a completely different energy around it than see if she put on any weight.
The thing is, she knew she got a problem. She told me about it. As in, and I know this is a problem.
That's good though.
Yeah, but it didn't stop her doing it. And even though I pointed out to her the fact that this person was only showing, you know, the best of everything. It's obvious, isn't it? If people have just got
everybody
a positive life,
then
they're not showing you the full picture, because everyone has those stresses and those times that are not so good. But you wouldn't necessarily get your phone out for those, would you?
No, but also nobody is, well, some people do, but most people are not showing that awful picture that was taken of you at the bad time. You show like two double chins.
Yeah.
Right? And you're just having like a fit, and then like water is coming out of your nose because you're snorting from laughing. Like you don't really show that. Some people do, but most people won't.
Yeah.
Show those faces.
No. Yes. So she did know she'd got a problem, but I don't know. I think she's still got a problem, because she's not able to disengage.
And no, so I guess the question would be, why does she, what kind of validation is she looking for, and why?
And she's very unhappy at the moment, so clearly that's having an impact. And I suspect she needs to crack on and live her own life rather than looking at this old friend's life.
Yeah. But I actually used to have a friend who could completely get lost in Facebook and like checking out all our past classmates from like secondary school.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I was like, why? And she's like, I don't know. So she's like, did you know this and this person had a baby? I'm like, I didn't think of this person for the last 8 years. How do you know? Are you friends on Facebook? No, but I was on this person's profile and they're friends with this person, they're friends with this person, they're, and I'm like, okay. But yeah, so there's a reason why, I know it's a thing.
Yeah.
I know it's a thing, and I personally don't understand why people do it, but I guess it's just, you know, maybe comparing your life to others, maybe just a check-in whether you're, yeah, what your life looks like compared to others.
Yeah, and whether you're achieving. I mean, the background to the story is that these two were friends, and my friend's friend was copying the way she dressed and what have you. So I think that's kind of the basis of it. And then they, I don't think they had a big falling out, but they kind of went their own ways and didn't stay in touch. And now she's just checking out this person. And I think it is to do, well, it is to do with how she's feeling herself. And
yeah.
But obviously it's not healthy, because she's never going to get what she wants, which is to see this woman, you know, fat and fat and unhappy, because then she can, like you say, she's got that validation that her life is better in some way. But she's not going to see that on Facebook, because even if it was the case, she's not going to post it, is she?
No, and I would say, and this is the same for if you as a writer, if you look online and you see other people's failures, right? And you feel like some sort of gratification because you're doing it right. Right? So yeah. you validate yourself by comparing yourself to people who are doing or less than. That's not okay, because that means you have to seriously look at what you are pursuing and why you are pursuing that.
Yeah.
Because for me, and you already said that your friend is not in a good place right now, because that's exactly what it means.
Yeah.
And the same goes for writers. Like if, and this is why I like the Stephen Pressfield quotes, imagine, where he says, this is what an amateur does.
Yes,
is because it is. It's like, so your validation is not coming from within. Your drive is not coming from within. So if you are not confident, so I think maybe, and I didn't think of this before, but maybe comparisonitis has a lot to do with confidence.
I can see that.
So if you are sure about what you're doing and you don't have any hang-ups, or you don't feel guilt about all the work you're not putting in, or you know deep down inside you are doing everything you can and it's really your way of doing it and it's the best thing for you, then why would you be comparing yourself to others?
Yeah. I think I'm trying to think if I do it in any particular circumstances, you know, not beyond writing. But I can't think that I do. I've caught myself doing it occasionally. But like you say, that awareness of it just helps. Just helps you pull back.
Yeah.
And go, hang on a minute, what are you doing?
Like, yeah, I think that knowing that's my point. Like, I don't think some of us are immune to this. Mm. But I think just knowing that it's out there and that everybody is prone to having these moments, especially when you're not. Because when I hit like my massive, my big month last December, do you really think I was comparing myself to other writers?
No.
Like, there's no way, because I was on top of the world.
Yeah.
And not because I was doing better than other people, But because I was doing so well compared to myself the previous month and the months before that, and compared to myself, December 2019.
And you were achieving what you wanted to achieve.
Yes. So I would say that, yeah, maybe confidence does have a lot. So I'm really learning that the types of book that I have out now are really, they're doing much better up to the, like during the winter months. And there's like, and they slow down. So it's very slow right now. No matter how many ads I throw at them, it's just slow. Yeah. I'm still selling books every day, but just not as many. And I also get it just because of the type of books that I have. A lot of them will be bought as presents around Christmas time. I mean, you bought my book as a present for.
Yes.
So that's for very normal. Mm. Yes. You know what? And this is just a completely side note. I'm getting a lot of people in my accountability group on Facebook who get it from their employers when they leave the job to pursue writing, or when they start doing less hours because they are getting serious about their writing. So a lot of their employers, or almost former employers, give them the book as a farewell gift or as a good luck with only working 4 days a week. And I'm like, that's so nice.
It is.
Just a completely side note. But I have so good, like, how did you get the book? And then, I just quit my job, or I just started working less, so my employer gave me this. And I was like, my coworkers gave me this. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so great.
There's a marketing angle there.
Yeah, I should really think that through.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's a complete aside. I lost my thread. See, I knew I shouldn't have said this.
Well, I know that, like, Joanna Penn is very big on not seeing another's success as your failure, and also that there's enough for everyone rather than you're taking away from me.
Yeah, and that's in that exact same chapter.
Is it?
God, I feel so studied. Yeah, she says, secondly, the first point is about somebody saying that she thought, somebody writing an article that she thought J.K. Rowling should stop writing because she's had a success and now she should just move on and let other people have a go at it. So she's like, first of all, Rowling is a writer, right? So she's gonna keep writing. And then she says, secondly, this is poverty mindset. The thought that there are only a certain number of readers or amount of money in the world, and that one author's success takes away our own potential future. But that's not true. Yeah. And I'm like, the more the merrier. And I was listening to this long talk during a conference. It was about subscription. So like Kindle Unlimited, Kobo Plus and stuff like that. So all the people, it was like a panel with people from different companies. So one of the guys in Canada who's working for Kobo was actually a Dutch guy. So that was kind of funny. But he lives in Canada and he works for Kobo. He actually said that research shows that when you get like subscriptions, a lot of people think, well, if I put my book in a subscription, I'm going to sell less books. And he says, no, it's actually funnily that people who do subscriptions, they are usually people who don't really read a lot before.
So you get more.
Yeah, so you only get more. And so he said, that's the first thing. It's a completely different pool you're fishing in. He said, and secondly, for some reason, and we don't know why yet, if books are successful in the subscription, they also start selling more, like they call it a la carte. And he says that's probably because the people who are reading it on subscription tell their friends, and then their friends are like, oh, but they don't have the subscription, so they just buy the book. So he's like, it's like a win-win. It's just people reading more. People are reading more. So yeah, I like that. Oh, I remember where I got, like, I was the... with my book sales, that it's slower now. If I compare myself to somebody who writes novels, people who write novels have a tick, like their sales usually tick up around Christmas and just before the holidays, depending on what kind of novels, like romance novels sell much better during the summer months.
Yeah, to read on the beach.
Yeah,
if you get that opportunity.
Yes, yeah. That, I'm really curious how these sales differ for romance writers over the past 2 years, past two summers. But so if I were to compare myself to fiction writers with these particular, like with my journals, that's not going to be helpful. So I've not even when I do like nonfiction, because they are very particular books. So I just try to compare myself with myself.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So I wonder whether that's something you do as well. Like, do you when you make comparisons, do you look at where was I last year and where am I now?
No. But I ought to. I did ought to. I think...
Well, you have a journal now to work through that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, it is something that I ought to do. Yeah. That's the other thing, is things are different this year to what they were last year. And
yes,
you've got to see that as well, haven't you? You've got to see it in context.
But that's the awareness I was talking about.
Yeah.
Because like when the pandemic hit, right? So for me, for example, I mostly, compare myself to myself, but there's also a danger in that, because what if, like, if I compare my book sales, what if I don't match the same success in December?
Mm.
That's gonna suck, right? Mm. But then, of course, like, the reasonable part of me will say, well, then you can see, okay, what happened? Like, is there something I could have done differently? Is there something to learn? But also, part of the reason why, and it was especially the first volume of 52 Weeks of Writing, that one sold like crazy, starting in October until January. And it could have been like, yes, it's the holiday season, so, and it's a great gift, as you know, but it could also have been, we're still in this pandemic.
Mm.
And maybe people are just like, I'm done. I'm still at home. I'm just going to write this book. And so maybe in November, let's say this November, right? Pandemic is over. We're all good. I mean, I see the numbers rising everywhere, so I don't think it's very likely. let's say in November, it's over. I don't think anybody's going to care for my journal, because everybody will be traveling around the world November, December, January.
Mm.
Because we have freedom. So it does, even if you compare yourself, that was just the sort of like my disclaimer. Like, I think comparing yourself to yourself is the healthiest thing you can do. But there's also, there is a danger. You have to be aware of the fact that not, like, things do happen.
And you've got to see it in that context, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah, so you always have. Let's say you were a full-time writer before the pandemic, but then the pandemic hit. So your partner was working home, your three kids were suddenly at home, and you still wanted to write 9 to 5. That if you compare yourself, if you compare your 2019 self, or your 2020 and 2021 self to your 2019 self, then you're being really mean to yourself if you don't take that context into account.
I think it's also about taking the judgment out of it, isn't it? And looking at it kind of with that dispassionate, you know, view.
Or curious, I would say. Maybe that's what I always try. Like I'm expecting that I'm going to have another great December. That's what I'm expecting.
Yeah.
Right. But I hope that if that doesn't happen, that I can be curious to see, okay, so what could it have been? What?
It's hard.
Yeah, like, what can I learn from this? Yeah, that's very hard. And I think that's usually the hindsight thing.
Yeah.
I think when you're in it, it's very hard to do that step back and don't see last year's number and just take it as, yeah.
Well, I was looking at last year's numbers when I set this year's goals, but I wasn't taking into account everything else.
Yeah, and I think, so I don't want people to use that as an excuse to not plan or to not use that as like a sort of the baseline.
Yeah.
Because, and we've talked about this before, you do need to set those goals if you want to get where you want to go. Or if you have the drive to get anywhere, it's so much better if you plan out the direction. But while you're in it doing the goals, you know, like achieving these things, you have to also be ready, or you have to be flexible enough that if something happens, your goals might shift, but that's okay. Like the whole it's not set in stone thing that we talked about before.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's good. It's good to look back, like when you compare yourself to yourself. I think it's good to look back to where you were and where you want to be. But if something happens in between, then it's going to be really hard, but you have to find a way to be okay and maybe be curious.
I like that. Or I like that curiosity.
Okay. But I think it might take a while. Like, yeah. If I'm in December and I'm not selling any books, then I think I won't be curious in the moment.
Yeah.
I think I won't be any fun to talk to in the moment. But maybe come February, I might be able to look into what happened. How could this have come about? Like I said, I do think it's the healthiest way in terms of like, of course, Joanna Penn has another lovely quote for this one as well. Oh God, I do love quotes. But yeah, there is, for me anyway, so maybe other people don't have this, but for me, like I'm so goal driven that I can trip myself up by staying so focused on my own goals and where I want to be, that I can be really mean if I didn't grow enough or didn't achieve as much as I thought I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, so that, I think that's,
it's a, like, danger, a lesson in
kindness.
Yeah.
So anyway, Joanna Penn has this quote, and it's from Jocelyn Glee, I think it's pronounced, and it's from a book called Manage Your Day to Day. And the quote goes like this. She says, stop looking at what other people are doing and look at what you're achieving. Stop looking sideways and look at where you're going.
Yeah, I like that. Simple. So,
very simple. I do like that. And that is how I do my thing. That's how I do most of my things, I think. But yeah, for me, it is a bit, it's a bit tricky sometimes. Yeah. But I can I put in one? So this is a quote, more quotes, I know. But actually, so if this is something that you're also sometimes struggling with, like being harsh on yourself when you do compare yourself to yourself and you're not happy with the results yet, this is a quote that I put on, when was it? Yeah, this was a quote I put on my wall after the 20 books to 50K Edinburgh conference.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with anybody in the conference, right? But what I think it was what Greg Martel said. He said something similar. And it reminded me of this quote from Brené Brown's The Gifts of Imperfection.
Yeah.
So when I got back from when I came back from the conference, I looked it up, and I put both Greg's quote and her quote like on my wall, just as a constant reminder. And it has really helped me to become nicer to myself and treat myself with more compassion as well. So Brené Brown says, and this is from the introduction to The Gifts of Imperfection. She says, so this is basically her advice for, say this to yourself whenever you wake up in the morning. No matter what gets done and how much is left undone, I am enough.
She's such a hero, Brené Brown, isn't she?
Yes, I love her. But that is really that, because you know I'm a bit of, just slightly bit of an overachiever.
Yeah.
Just like slightly. And that together with, I think Greg's, I changed, you know, my Kanban board. That's where it used to be. Greg's quote was something like, it doesn't matter whether you take the steps fast or slow, as long as you're taking them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that those two together for me have changed. They have given me so much peace.
Yeah.
And from that moment on, I started under planning, because I can easily like want to do way too much in a year. So I started under planning.
Yeah.
Like what would be enough? What would make me happy? So I set a baseline for myself in terms of what I want to achieve. And that those two quotes really helped me with that. So I thought I'd share them.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Shall we move on to the question?
Yes. You had a really great question. Or do you want me to go with the first one?
Yeah, you go with the first one.
Okay. So the first question we want to ask, obviously, very obvious question. Do you suffer from comparisonitis? And if so, where does it show up in your life? Like what areas?
Do you want me to do the second one in case people want to do that?
Yeah, because I really like that one.
So, for the next 24 hours, count the number of times you compare yourself to others. It doesn't have to be writing related. It could be on social media. How do you think that affects you?
Yeah, I really like that.
Are you going to do it?
Yeah, it's so good to do that.
Mm.
I think so. I can try that, yeah. No, but I really like the idea is that you do that for 24 hours and then you actually reflect, right, on, because it can be so useful to know when and where and to whom you compare yourself. I think there's a lot to learn from that.
I'm going to try it because I've told you that I don't do it and I'm questioning whether that's true.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so how about after we stop recording, we just set a day and we're both doing it on the same day so we can keep each other accountable on that particular day.
Okay, yeah, okay, let's do that.
Because knowing myself, knowing us, the next time we hit record for the next episode, we'll be like, oh, did you do that thing? Oh, no, I forgot.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's keep each other accountable for that one, because I think it's a good one.
Okay. I think that's a good plan.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.